Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the November 20 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I am University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up on this edition of Commodity Week, we'll talk with Matt Bennett from Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets from Elkhorn, Nebraska, Pete Manhart from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign County. There's still time, by the way, for you to purchase tickets for our November the 24th. That's Monday, the coming Monday, next Monday, Farm Assets Conference in Normal, Illinois. They're just $25. You can do that online at willag.org, willag.org. We will accept a few walk-ins, so take your chances if you want. You can walk in. We start at 10 o'clock in the morning for registration, opening at really 10:15. It's just $25 at the Marriott Hotel. That includes parking in the deck next to the hotel and the noon meal. Should be a great program. If you get the opportunity, please do join us. We'll talk about the price of farmland, crop insurance, the ARC PLC decision with the great professors from right here on campus, and then a dozen of our regular analysts. So be sure to join us for the Farm Assets Conference, if you can, in Normal, Illinois, this coming Monday.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
Let's begin, as usual, with a list of items to discuss. Matt Bennett from Channel Seeds.
Well, I think one thing we might want to just discuss a little bit would be really good exports on corn today were a nice thing to see, significantly better than what we've seen in the last month, as far as the last month's average anyway. And so I'd like to talk about that a little bit. And then just a continued discussion about price ratio between beans 15 and these corn, and talking about planting mix, with the fertilizer implications and whatnot.
Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets out of Elkhorn, Nebraska.
Well, I'm curious to see how the market and even the USDA demand tables or supply tables treat this last 10% of the U.S. harvest, or like the last 40% of the harvest in Michigan and Wisconsin. I mean, there's going to be quality losses and overall grain losses from that, but how you decide how much of that is, how you decide, of what gets piled out in the open, how much of that gets lost, that's sort of up for interpretation. And then what I think what's really driving the markets, or what could be driving the markets, is, again, the weather, as usual, in South America. This is the time frame for a weather market from South America.
Bill Mayer, Strategic Farm Marketing.
Yeah, I had both of those. You know what the production and the supply and demand looked like in the final report in January, South American weather. I think 2015, I'm picking up, a lot more beans. Look like we're going to have a lot more bean acres. Will prices adjust to prevent that before we get to next spring? And I think we'll talk about the fund position in the corn market. Nobody seems to be talking much about that.
Pete Manhart from Bates Commodities.
I would add to the list that the corn was really good this morning, but the beans were the lowest of the year. And is that the start of the front loading of bean sales being over? The exports were poor this morning on beans.
Well, tell me more about that. Let's start there, in fact. Pete, do you think this is the beginning of the end of front loaded on the beans?
Well, we front loaded them a bunch, but we've also got rumors and or maybe there are some facts out there of stuff being switched to South America already, especially in the meal. And the meal has dove back down where it's not as tight as it was, so the export numbers this morning, supposedly the lowest of the year. What happened to all that front loading? Is it starting to fade away, or is it already going to be moved away?
Anybody have a comment on that one?
I think the trade was really looking for some cancellation this morning, actually, and didn't get it, and that's why we ended up a little bit higher today here. But I think they're going to get those cancellations eventually, and that's, we may have to see some beans actually coming out of South America before that happens, though.
Let me go around the horn with each of you, because I think this is important in the bean market. I want to find out where everybody is on Tuesday night of this week. We had an Ag Outlook panel in Clinton, Illinois, and I had Pete and Matt and Jackie Vakes with us. Everybody there was a seller of soybeans, so I know where Pete and Matt land. That's of the current crop. Elaine, where are you, a seller of soybeans, old crop at this point?
Yes, I'm bearish of soybeans, but I've been bearish all soybeans all through this rally. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. But they're definitely overpriced compared to corn. And I think that that sort of urgent panic about the soybean meal, that's now being fought in the basis bids from the Midwestern processors rather than speculative participation in the soybean futures market. So I think, yeah, it's justified for soybeans to be correcting themselves downward now.
And Bill Mayer, how about you?
Yeah, I think that you continue to try to make sales. I'm like Elaine, I've been bearish even before the rally and into the rally and still. But I think one has to be a little bit careful, because I think that we are anticipating, like Pete was saying, that South America is going to take over the exports here, and that may just drag out a little bit longer than we think because of some of the weather down there. The plantings are delayed, and we may end up selling beans into the export market longer than we think we're going to.
What do you make of that, Bill, then, in terms of sales of beans that farmers have already closed the bin doors on? Do they need to wait it out, in your opinion, or is it just a tricky business?
Well, of course, it depends on where you're at, but I wouldn't, you know, I would try to be somewhere, I wouldn't probably want to have more than 25% of my crop that I'm holding on to at this point, but I think if you're in that position, you can be a little bit patient now.
And Lane Cub, your view on this one, you're a seller, but are you a willing seller today?
Well, I think at this point, what I would be waiting for is for more of a correction. And then if it remains dry in South America, I want to be very low risk in this. So if you still want to participate in the soybean market, you sold too much of the cash market like I did, you know, you may look at this as buying some options, some call options to get some of your cover or some of your ownership back on, but only in a very low cost, low risk way, and only if the South American weather remains questionable.
And then Matt Bennett, you're more of a seller today than the rest of them, I think.
Yeah, you know, and I definitely sympathize with Lane, because I was certainly bearish throughout this rally. And, you know, the way I was looking at it, the way I'm going to continue to look at it, is for the producers that I work with, 99% of them had phenomenal bean yields. And so if I'm wrong on the markets, or if I'm wrong on something as far as trying to help them market grain, and we're still making money, I can take being wrong like that. And so, you know, still today, like I said the other night, producer asked me, hey, did I miss the boat on this bean market? And I guess my answer to that is beans are worth more today than what they were the day you cut them. You know, you haven't missed anything. You still have an excellent price. You know, maybe get rid of them and be happy with it. As far as re-ownership, I'm like Lane. I would be okay with a guy doing something like that, but I sure don't want to spend much money doing it.
And, Pete, I probably better get your 2 cents worth on this one.
I have them all sold now, and I would possibly lightly do that call strategy if we go back past the Fibonacci numbers back into the, you know, 950 areas.
And, Pete, if I can stay with you, and I want to come back around with everybody on new crop soybeans, because I think everybody has been thinking about new crop soybeans a lot more than they have in the past, and what the acreage mix might look like, and whether or not they should be pricing them in at this point. Pete, your thoughts there?
Well, we hit 10.56 and three quarters, what, last Thursday, and we were down to whatever, right at the $10 level. Well, we were under $10. We went over 10.04 today. At the end of the day, I just can't see not doing something to protect that $10 price on 15 soybeans.
We have been selling beans for quite some time on the 15 crop, and I would say several of my producers at least have protection under 100% of the 15 crop. We personally on our farm either have sold or have protected in some fashion all of our beans that we're going to be growing for next year, basis our APH. And then, we've also sold a quarter of our 16 beans. So, I guess you can maybe scent a bit of bearishness on beans in my voice, but that's kind of where I'm standing.
I better keep going around the horn. We'll start again with you, Elaine Cubb, on new crop soybean sales.
Well, I'll go against the trend, and I'll say that maybe a person could gamble on the normal seasonal patterns and start doing your pricing in the March, April, May timeframe, like the normal years that we used to have. But to the topic of how the acreage pans out, I think it's kind of a toss-up, and I think that not a lot of November seed sales has been happening, or at least not as much as in previous years. And maybe that's a function of, people not needing to spend as much for taxes this year as in previous years. But I think it's also just because it is a toss-up price-wise when you're looking at soybeans versus corn for 2015. And a lot could change between now and springtime, depending on what happens in South America if they don't plant a lot of second crop corn. So, well, like I mentioned, it's sort of still up in the air.
And let's stay with the acreage. And Bill Mayer, this was on your list for next year. Will we have more bean acres was your question. Do you have an answer to it?
Well, I've got clients that are planting more bean acres than they had planned on. If you look back 6 months ago, what they probably would have planned on planting next year. And I guess the approach I'm taking, that if you're doing that, I think you need to be aggressive and getting some protection on. Now, I don't know that I've got many that I can get as aggressive maybe as Matt's being, but, use some min-max contracts, use some sales, get some protection on there. If you're changing your acreage mix because of the ratio and the economics just tell you that you should, and that's the way I've been approaching it. And I think, the price of corn either has to come up or the price of beans has to come down, or more likely a combination of both as we move into, next February, March period.
Bill, are those clients in areas where they historically would turn to soybeans, whether that be southern Illinois, southern Indiana, maybe the Dakotas, as opposed to corn, or are they in the prime corn belt growing counties of the nation?
Not necessarily in areas you'd expect the change to take place, although I don't have a lot of clients in those areas, to be quite frank. Some of it, Todd, I'm finding is cash rent, some cash rent farms where the beans just work better than the corn does at current price levels.
I know, Elaine, that you're just closer, but not in the Dakotas. Are those areas going to turn back to more soybeans than they have in the past?
Well, I think they're turning to wheat, to spring wheat, and certainly North Dakota, depends on its very diversified portfolio of a lot of specialty crops, and I think has been turning away or will turn away more in 2015 from the corn and soybean mix that won there for those few years when it was, $7 corn. But as far as, just your general sort of southern Minnesota, eastern South Dakota ground, normal ground, I think that folks were happier with soybeans than corn. And like Bill said, the price at this point still is buying beans more than corn.
Now let's turn our attention to the corn market more thoroughly at this point. And Elaine, I want to stay with you. You had some thoughts and questions on what the end of the corn harvest will look like, what impact that might have on the marketplace, whether the market has come to grips with some of the yields in the northern parts of the Corn Belt. I know when we've talked with Ben Pruce at the Andersons there at their Everly, Iowa facility there, I think he said 30 bushels off some parts of their APH, which would be a pretty good shot. But there are some areas in the Corn Belt that didn't yield like Illinois did, that's for sure.
Yeah, and even if they yielded, one thing that I looked at, I did some back-of-the-napkins calculations of how much might be lost from storing on open piles. And, the pace of growing our storage facilities in this country has not kept up with the pace of yield. So there's a lot more open piles going along the northern Corn Belt this year than in any previous year. and my back of a napkin calculation said maybe 41 million bushels get lost if you assume 5% of any open pile gets lost. But that's way high because it's going to get blended in. But it's just something to keep in mind that there will be losses from that. There will be losses that never get out of the field. And as you mentioned, there are just some areas that had less than ideal yields too.
Can you give me a sense, Elaine, on the ground of what this means for a producer? Because if I remember correctly, and I'm pretty certain about this, Iowa, Minnesota farmers have long had much more storage than those in other parts of the Corn Belt. They may have built some more. We've built a great deal to the east of the Mississippi River. But because of the storage, they haven't had ground piles in the past, and now they have storage and ground piles. And rail has been very difficult in your area for the better part of a couple of years. So it sounds like there is corn with no place to go there.
Yes. And that is even true in Iowa, where, like you mentioned, the numbers, theoretically, there's ample storage. But just locally, you know, if a particular elevator doesn't have enough storage in that area, there are, or there were at least last week, piles of open corn sitting around Iowa that aren't necessarily places that aren't set up to handle them as well as the covered piles in the Dakotas, the big bunkers. They've been doing this for 5-10 years already and have it down to quite an art. There's elevators around here that pushed all their wheat out into bags to make space for corn and beans and are also piling corn and beans. So depending on how you handle it, it's not that big of a deal. But certainly. And this rail situation is a long-term problem where it's going to be coal and oil and intermodal traffic for years and years and years. So I'm definitely bullish on storage. It's going to be needed for all the foreseeable future.
And what's the local basis levels look like?
Oh, they're not as bad as they were. They've come up maybe 25 cents or so, but you're still talking 60 under, 50 under in some areas.
And then by contrast, Matt Bennett at ADM on Thursday, they were 8 over looking for corn.
Yes, that is correct.
So there's a big difference. Of course, ADM is always in need of corn every day. And I suppose it tells you that you need to pay attention locally to your marketplace and what the basis looks like. And how do you know, Matt, when you should make a sale on one of those basis pops?
Well, I think, you know, for instance, any time that you see a basis pop at a time that you don't really expect it, you need to understand, you know, also look at the board and see whether the market is trying to tell you, hey, they want the bushels now. We talked about this at the meeting the other night. You know, with soybeans, there's not near the carry in the market is what there is on the is what there is on the corn market. And so, you know, obviously they're wanting the soybeans now. As far as corn goes, you got full carry. So really, it's a completely different situation.
You spent a lot of time in ethanol plants, Bill, at the elevators. How do you read the basis market, and how do you coach farmers to make decisions based on their local activity?
Well, I think we have to look, first of all, at why this carries in the market that Matt's talking about. And the obvious reason is because those guys that put the corn out there on the ground that Elaine was talking about have to get some kind of return, including some of the losses they're going to have to take, you know, from a quality standpoint. So that's where the carry is going to come in. But I think the mistake sometimes that a farmer makes is thinking that I'll just wait till next March and that carry will, you know, that value will still be there. I think the thing I try to coach guys on is to try to take advantage of selling that carry in ahead of time, at least in the futures market, and then come in and use, you know, the March period or spring or summer, whenever you want to move it, to maybe lock in your bases. And that's been the most efficient way in big crop years to take advantage of that.
And Pete Manhart, I think you've done a lot of this kind of work too.
Well, I think one thing that hasn't come out is it doesn't matter whether the basis is really good if the flat price is good. So, I mean, I've had guys that wouldn't sell because the basis was 20 under, but the flat price, because of the board prices, was a moneymaker hand and fist over, and they weren't going to sell because they didn't think the basis was good enough. So you have to look at also the flat cash price you're getting, at where it's at. And, you know, if the basis is really good, yeah, that's a good time to do things. But where's the flat price at, too? You can't let that get out of your sight of what the actual cash price is.
Elaine Kupp, I want to come back to you on one of the issues you gave us up front on your list, which is what WASDE would do on the monthly numbers if they would take those up, and will they, I suppose, is the question, in December. And then how do we calculate in January what the size of this crop is and what the acreage might be? Because the FSA numbers still don't jive exactly with what USDA has on its list, and FSA's simply behind because not all the acres have been reported, I guess.
Yeah, from the supply standpoint, the acres and the yield, you know, I can't even begin to guess how they're going to handle that this year, and maybe somebody else has some better insight on that. But what I'm going to be looking for the next few months is actually some bearish developments from the demand side. You've got a stronger dollar that's working against all U.S. dollar-denominated commodities, so exports could very well get hit, and ethanol could very well get hit, you know, if we don't see a significant increase in demand for fuel. The biggest structural change that's happening, you know, commodities versus the dollar-wise, would be in crude oil now that the U.S. is such a dominant producer of oil. So it's no longer the case where foreign produced oil and foreign oil producers, Saudi Arabia and OPEC, can bully the market around. Now our own dollar denominated commodity is helping our own consumers when the dollar is strong. So that's probably the biggest structural change, but it's harder to tie that into how that affects the ag markets. I think the biggest ag market that's having a structural change is, like you mentioned, the livestock. Australia got a good deal selling or agreeing to sell their beef to China. And Brazil is certainly in a position to be selling beef to China, Australia, Brazil, any of these other areas. When we have a strong dollar, it's going to be a big headwind for us trying to grow exports in the livestock sector.
I think, Todd, there's a, you know, there's a long-term trend to more valuable, more demand for agricultural commodities, and that started, you know, clear back in the 90s, if not further back. But there's a, you know, there's a trading channel within that that prices will stay up, you know, go up or go down depending on the, you know, the amount on hand. And I mean, you can just look at the 2012 year and 2014 year for corn as an indication as to, you know, where that price range, you know, upper and lower part of the channel might be as far as corn goes. And, you know, we had, and you look at the difference in the yields those 2 years, it's tremendous, and it's strictly due to weather. So, I mean, I think that we do have an uptrending value on commodities, but it's not necessarily set in stone that it has to stay at the top end of that.
For next year, for corn, 2015, what do producers need to be thinking about at this point other than what they should do about cash rents? Matt Bennett?
Well, I think whenever you look forward, obviously there's a lot of implications due to price structure, you know, that we've already alluded to, but we need to also keep in mind that, you know, from input price standpoint, fertilizer is essentially the same, if not just a shade higher than last year. Whereas we're looking at fall delivery prices for our next crop, significantly lower than what they were at this time last year, depending on where you're at, anywhere from 50 to 80 cents. And so that definitely is going to have an impact, especially in areas like Lane alluded to. Spent a fair amount of time in the Dakotas in late summer, and I know those guys were saying then, you know, we're backing way off on corn acres. Now, I do think, you know, in the I states, there might be some guys in better ground that will probably go ahead and consider maybe still keeping a fairly heavy corn mix. But I definitely expect, based upon what I'm hearing, you know, I think Elaine was talking about seed sales. I've talked to several different guys in the seed industry that there's just been a lot of concern on the lack of corn sales. And so, you know, I'm expecting that unless price does something to change that and gets guys to do something they're not really planning on ahead of time, I think that you're looking at an acreage mix that is probably going to be suggesting maybe we should have been looking at being more heavier marketers of beans earlier on, because I think it could be pretty tough on the bean market moving forward.
And it all comes back to selling soybeans, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm sorry I ended that way. I apologize.
But that seems to be across the board with most of the analysts we talk with. It all comes back to selling soybeans because there's just a supply. And I think everybody's looking at, what, the 430 million bushel carryout. And it just seems big no matter what happens across the planet at this point. And I suppose that's where most of you land, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And I think when you talk about the corn, Todd, I think you have to try to take an approach where it's not like we've never gone into a year where you couldn't lock in profits, which is kind of what we're seeing this year when you look at the budgets. We've done that before at this time of the year. It's been a while. But I think you got to take the approach where you can put yourself in as much of a win-win situation as you possibly can. Don't just sit there and do nothing and allow, you know, potential downside risk to get you, but give yourself some ability to take advantage of markets if they do go up. And, you know, there again, some kind of option type strategy or min-max contracts or something that gives you some room to get that profit if it turns out being there, but you don't get killed if you're wrong and it does go down.
Okay, Bill, so I'm going to stay with you purposely because Strategic Farm Marketing does a lot of crop insurance sales. Why would you not just use your crop insurance? And we've talked about this before, because that's what farmers have done for several years now.
Yeah, and I think the answer to that question is right now you don't know what that crop insurance price in February is going to be, and there's risk at this point between now and then, and there are some tools you can use to try to lock some of that in and still give you some upside potential. You have to be careful. Some of those products are expensive and maybe, you know, cost you more than what your downside risk could possibly be at this time. So I think that's the reason once you get that, you do have that portion of it covered. That's a revenue protection. That's not a price protection necessarily. And, you know, as we found out this year, if the bushels get high enough, you know, your revenue can go up even though the price has come down. So there's several reasons there, but I think the timing of it's always a problem this time of the year because you are making decisions based on current price levels and that, but you don't know exactly where you're going to be when you get into knowing what those insurance prices are next spring.
You don't know where the insurance prices are, but you do know what December corn for next year looks like. So I suppose you can, Pete Manhart, begin to figure forward what your break-even prices might be, and you can manage that risk in the marketplace. And that's what you do on an everyday basis, isn't it?
Yeah, you can try to do that with puts and calls, out of the money puts and calls. You might be a combination of all kinds of things. But number one, what's the cost you grow a bushel of corn? And what's the price at now? And is that profitable? And if it is, can we lock some of it in? If it isn't, is there any way we can add to that price by doing something? And I think you have to be looking at that every day when we bounce up, when we go down. Where can I add another dime, another 15? To the price that I'm going to get cash-wise.
I think that's a great point, Pete, that you have to look for opportunities to pull some value out of the market because of the volatility that we're probably bound to see here.
So let's wrap this up. I'd like a final word from each of you on whatever topic you want to make sure that people are thinking about at this time of year, because they're about to go into their books. And they'll be doing a lot of taxes. They'll be doing a lot of book work. They'll probably be making a lot of purchases for next year's crop. What are the important items that they should consider at this time? Elaine Cobb, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, I'll kind of tie in a number of things here. I like Matt's idea of buying the fertilizer, but because of, like Bill said, there's a lot of volatility that's going to come in here this spring. We really don't know what the corn to soybean situation is going to look like when spring rolls around. and just the conservation aspect of it. I don't like the idea of putting the fertilizer on in the fall, even though it's not really a relevant point right now and most of the Midwest is covered in snow. But that's really my thought, is just that the South American weather situation is still going to keep these things really up in the air, and we don't know what's going to be the best crop to grow next year just yet.
Matt Bennett?
Yeah, I think, while you can tell that I'm maybe a little less friendly to the bean market than the corn market, we talked about this the other night in Clinton. I think whenever you get a strong rally like we've had in the last few weeks, even if you have the tendency to maybe be a little more friendly to one market or another, as I said that night, a rally doesn't do you much good unless you use it to some extent. So even though I'm more friendly to the corn market than the bean market, we're still making some sales there. And I think that the key is to be really aware, as Pete was saying, there's a lot of volatility. Hey, we've gotten this big rally. Maybe we need to do something with it. And then, you know, that's both for cash corn and for a new crop corn. And then, you know what, we can step in later and buy some calls to cover sales if we need to. But, you know, by all means, I think this is going to be a very volatile market, and a person has to have a plan in place and realize that they can make adjustments to their hedges, or hedge their hedge, if you will.
And Pete Manhart?
Just be aware of opportunities that crop up. Don't just have a blind eye and say, I'll wait till spring. If we have a big rally like we've just had, as Matt said, do something with it. If we go down tremendously and we know there's no reason to be down that low, you can do something at that end to add value to the price of your sales. So be aware of what's going on. Be ready to jump and take advantage of something that happens in the price structure.
And Bill Mayer.
Well, first of all, we got Thanksgiving coming up here next week, and I think we have a lot to be thankful for. For the most part, we had a bountiful harvest this year, and that's a thing to be thankful for. I do think as you approach the 2015 and beyond, I think you just have to and I think Elaine said this, don't go in and assume anything, because usually when everybody's assuming the same thing, as we found out this fall, doesn't always happen. So I think the approach you have to take is to try to protect but stay as flexible as you can, so that you can change your position if you need to. And, you know, that leads us way back to options in a lot of cases.
Our panelists today included Matt Bennett from Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets from Elkhorn, Nebraska, Pete Manhart from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.